You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey friends, Noah here from the New Evangelicals podcast. This is just a quick trigger warning to let you know that in this episode, we are discussing issues of sexual abuse and the John MacArthur scandals.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Another episode of the New Evangelicals podcast. This is going to be like our new recurring segment, Noah. I'm not sure if we're going to call this bonus episode or whatever, but I like having these talks. We did one a few weeks ago, just you and I kind of shooting the shit, really, and talking about what's going on in evangelical culture. So I think we're going to do this every so often. And today is another day where we're going to do it. And we're posting this right away. So this is being recorded on a Friday, April 29th, and it's going to drop on a Friday, April 29th, because this is like a different kind of vibe than our normal interviewee format. So I'm pumped to do this. So good to be with you again.
You too, dude. Glad to be here. We've got so many things to talk about this week. Oh my gosh.
I know. I was in Miami this past weekend for my sister's wedding, and then I got home Tuesday. And then we have, of course, an infant and a two-year-old. And like I still don't know what day it is. I don't know which way is up. The wedding itself was beautiful. My sister is she owns her own hair salon, and it's very Jersey Shore. And so picture Jersey Shore in Miami with all the bachelor party, bachelorette party stuff. And then imagine a wedding that none of us could afford, even if we pulled all our resources together. I mean, she could have bought a house. And the wedding was beautiful. It was phenomenal. But there was a lot of energy that we had to give to make it all happen. And I am still trying to recover from being away in Miami for the weekend, truly.
I saw some of the pictures that you posted, and I thought these were like, snapshots from the next Bachelor episode or something. It was bizarre, but amazing. It looked like so much fun.
Yeah, my sister and I and my brother, we're all very different, but we're always there for each other. We get along great. And, we had to pull some strings. My brother ended up becoming the matron of honor. So my brother, for those of you who don't know, he's 6'2", 375. His arms are blacked out with tattoos. Okay, they're not tattooed. They are blacked out. He has head tattoos. So there he is holding a bouquet on the bride's side. And then I whipped up like a best man maid of honor speech that my brother and I gave. So honestly, like I said, it really went well. The venue was beautiful. Nothing was left untouched regarding like just the extravagant nature of everything. But man, from Friday when I landed to Tuesday when I got home, it was just go, 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 go. And my wife was at home with the kids because, our newest one, Harper, just too young to fly. And it really worked out, honestly, because my sister needed me. Like, just some things did not go according to plan. And so my brother and I had to make a lot of audibles and just kind of handle a lot of stuff. And so it worked out. I really missed not having Sarah there, but it ended up working out for the best.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. I'm really glad you had a good time. Like I said, I love the pictures, so. Looked like a lot of fun. But what
word.
a What a week to keep track of between that and just everything else that's going on in our pocket of the universe right now. I don't even know how to keep track of it anymore, dude. I feel like I'm missing something every day.
Well, we're getting to the point in DMs where I'm getting so many, hey, are you aware of this? Hey, yeah. Are you aware of this? We're like, I would need another full-time job just to read all of those DMs and keep up on them. Now, that being said, I love getting them. Like, please keep the DMs coming, you know? But we just can't respond to everything. At this point, Noah, we need a massive infusion of cash so we can start a news network. I mean, that's how many stories we're getting.
Yeah.
I would love one day, if it ever works out, where we can have a legitimate, like, you know, online news presence, because there are enough stories to go around to keep plenty of people busy for a long time, yeah, trying to unpack how complicated so many of these. I mean, we haven't talked about Meeting House up in Canada, about the abuse up there.
Oh my God.
And there's, you know, and then also there's, I think it's called Celebrate or Celebration Church, a big church in Florida. Hold on, I gotta find it. Someone just sent me an article about that and how the founders are, you know, a third party report has found them guilty of embezzling money, and they're. Yeah, it's Celebration Church. It's one thing after another, and it is hard to keep up, man. It's kind of eye opening. Like when I started this work, I thought, well, you know, there's some bad apples, but, like, you know, we can find the good. And yeah, obviously, there are still good people doing good things. We always have to say that, but it just seems like these cases of abuse and you know, narcissistic pastors or people who hide abuse. Yeah. It just seems like a fire hose of these stories coming to light, both in church and in parachurch ministries. Yeah. You know, I just did a live with Ashton, who's a survivor, now conqueror, as he put it, of the camp. How do you pronounce it? Kanakuk or something like that?
I think it's Kanakuk.
Yeah. And, you know, just how they've for decades have had counselors who have molested campers, and he was one of them. You know, and he's telling me the story on Instagram Live. You can go there and watch it. I'm trying not to cry. His story is amazing. But this is not just like one or two things. And these are very powerful people that commit these atrocities, and they're protected by the institution. I think that that's one more thing I wanted to mention. And I know I'm talking a lot already, and I'm sorry, Noah, to have you on here as like my therapist at this point, you know. But honestly, like, I'm realizing that just as bad, like, it's bad enough that John MacArthur, for example, right? That John MacArthur has now not one, not two, but three separate stories from Julie Roys documenting how John MacArthur and GCC, Grace Community Church, that's his church, have covered up or hidden or have failed to report, you know, men who were molesting children while on staff or teaching in some capacity at GCC.
Yeah.
And more, so that's bad. And then what makes it worse is that the people around those people, the institution, the culture, they don't bring it up. They don't demand accountability. You know, I've had pastors say, hey, we don't agree on a lot, but I agree. This John MacArthur thing is problematic. Great. So what are you doing about it? Are you writing John? Are you writing his publisher? Because that's what we have to do at this point.
Yeah.
Like, the only way for real accountability to happen is if the people in power who can actually make things change actually pull those triggers. You know, we can podcast for the next week. I can make another 100 videos on John MacArthur. It won't change a damn thing until the people around him and the systems that promote him and make him a lot of money. I mean, he makes a lot of money. You know, until those systems hold him to account, we're going to be in the same, you know, the same loop of chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Meeting House one that you brought up there, that one hit me in the gut, I think, more than any of these other ones that have come up recently. I don't know how much you were, how much you followed Bruxy Cavey or not, who was kind of the center
not
of,
much,
of that.
Not much.
But as far as the, he's one of the largest Brethren in Christ churches up there, which is Anabaptist. So by definition, they wouldn't necessarily be considered evangelical, but they definitely fall into that category at more of a cultural level. But the stuff that he was doing to challenge the theology of evangelical culture, the theology of hell and atonement, and so many of the things that he was doing, the books he was writing, were hitting me in such a meaningful place that when I saw that one, it was heartbreaking and humbling to remember that this goes beyond, you know, some of the people that we might want to see as problematic because of a certain theology or another, that there's something much deeper, there's something systematic going on here. And I had a conversation with it about that with a friend of mine who runs a website and news organization called Baptist Accountability, which is focused on essentially whistleblowing for pastors in Baptist churches that are being protected for consistent abuse of power and sexual abuse and scandals and all these things that have gone on. And I asked them from their perspective, because she has just seen this over and over and over and over again and talked with so many survivors, like, what's the common thread here? Like, what do we actually look to as a solution here? And she broke it down and said that the biggest problem are these power dynamics. The way in which the authority structures are set up, it just enable this kind of behavior. There's no way to maintain those systems and not have the risk of this sort of thing happening again. Which was really challenging to me, because you think about that, like, what are other options? You know, like, how do we move forward in a different way? And I think that those are kind of the questions that we have to be asking to look for real change to happen. It's exactly like you said, those structures, those systems and institutions are still propping these people up and supporting them and protecting them. And in a lot of cases, not in the case of say, Bruxy, but in a lot of these cases, particularly John MacArthur's, the theology is acting as sort of a wall of defense for those power structures, because those structures are being defended by a certain problematic interpretation of the Bible, right? Which is, you know, protecting these people in a lot of ways. Yeah. So there's just layers and layers and layers to this. And maybe it'd be helpful too for people that are listening and aren't totally aware of everything that's been going on, because it feels like every day it just keeps building and building and building, especially with Grace Community Church and John MacArthur's, all the scandals that are going on there. Do you think you'd be able to kind of summarize, like, what's going on there? What are some of these reports saying for anyone that's not aware of that?
So first, I'm going to recommend that if you're really interested, that you go right to the source, julieroys.com, the Roys Report. She has 3 or 4 articles up there now documenting different times when there were men who were on staff as pastors who ended up being child abusers and molesters. Now, the stories are very complicated as far as all the layers, and we could be here for an hour unpacking each one. Here are the 3 different stories in a nutshell. The first one is with David Gray. He was someone who was on staff at GCC, and he was abusing his kids and abusing his wife physically. She tried to file for separation. The elders insisted essentially that because David says he's sorry, she should reconcile. She didn't want to. They publicly shamed her. And then it came out later on that he was also sexually molesting her children. He then finally got arrested and is now serving, I think, 20 years to life in prison for his abuse of his kids. And there's a lot to that story. One thing that sticks out to me is that the elders at GCC and John MacArthur, they attempted to raise funds for his legal defense, for David Gray's legal defense. And David Gray started a prison ministry, and John MacArthur wrote him a letter hinting, kind of alluding to that maybe the conviction was a wrongful conviction. So that's one story we're dealing with. And again, all the receipts are there. All the details are there. The second story is with someone named Paul Gay. I'm going to pull that up just so I make sure I have the details in front of me. But this happened in the late 1970s. Again, he was a pastor on staff. He was molesting his daughter. Eventually, through a series of twists and turns, John MacArthur, another elder, and Paul met. Paul confessed to MacArthur in like the late 1970s about the molestation. John wrote a handwritten letter to his daughter, Wendy, who was the one being molested, where he said, you know, God has Let me pull up the actual quotes here. There's a few that are important. One quote is, "I'm sorry about all the problems you've been through, but I believe the Lord is working in a very special way." Another quote, "Your dad is really sad about it all, and we have met and talked at length about the situation." And also that letter said that, you know, hey, he's staying on staff. Now, Paul was eventually fired several years later in the late 1980s or mid-1980s for kissing a secretary. So that's what finally got him fired, not molesting his own daughter. And then eventually Wendy, again, and the daughter who was molested tried to confront MacArthur in the early 2000s, and then MacArthur denied it, saying, I never knew, we had no idea. There's other parts of that too. It turns out Paul was a serial abuser. He molested his own niece. He tried to molest other people in his family, and Paul was also on staff at other churches, including a lead pastor position, for 30-plus years until he died. In the one church, they confronted Paul with the family, and the church said, hey, we get it, we understand, but we're keeping him on staff anyway. And that is not an exaggeration. You can read it. Again, you can read the article. And the last one is a little more – it came out a little more recently – and again, I would still say it's obviously egregious, but I would say it's not as egregious as these other two, because essentially what happened was, the headline is, John MacArthur's church failed to report kidnapper and child molester for 2 years. So this is someone else who was teaching Sunday school. He confessed in a counseling session committing sex crimes against children, and it took about 2 years for GCC to finally report the abuse. Now, again, these are the high-level overviews. These reports are very detailed. You can see the emails. You can see the notes. All the receipts are there. So that's what's been happening with John MacArthur. Now, it's bad enough for this to happen one time, but for it to happen three times is evil. And then, of course, like we've said, Noah, watching the white evangelical machine, minimize, not say much, very few people calling for accountability, no one in real power making any changes possible. Yeah. Owen Strachan, is that how you pronounce his name? Strain? I don't know. But Owen Strain, a far-right fundamentalist guy who really out there just tweeted out or sent out on his Facebook page a promo because GCC is doing like a men's event. This is new. This is being promoted now. So it's very frustrating, and that's why the other day I did a reel, and I just said, like, I'm just not convinced. When I first started this account, when I first started New Evangelicals, my hope was we can change things from the inside out. I was still part of a church. I had no desire to leave.
Yeah.
And a year and a half later, I was asked to leave the worship team, which, of course, is really asking me to leave the church. Who stays at the church that they've been kicked out of, like, when it comes to serving? But anyway, I'm out of there, and then I'm just seeing story after story like this. And this John MacArthur thing, the reason why I'm so passionate about it is because John MacArthur is the fundamentalist. He is the conservative evangelical thinker. Him and John Piper are like the two greats, right, that have sold millions of copies of books. John has a Bible commentary, a study Bible. He sold millions of copies. This is not some Joe Schmo down the street with no power or no influence besides who's in his congregation. This man reaches quite literally millions of people globally, right? And to have these stories come out about him protecting, covering up for, minimizing men who are abusing not just children, but their own children, right? That it makes me want to just pull my hair out. It makes me want to, it makes me want to commit physical violence on the church property itself, not towards John, but, it makes me want to take, you know what I'm saying? Like, it makes me want to go and just, like, vandalize the church. It does. I would never do that for the record. I'm just saying, like that's the kind of urgency I have where it's like, what is going on here? So, I was hoping that these stories would be a real breaking point where we could say, look, thank God white evangelicalism, white culture in America has a breaking point, and we found it. But this, talk about total depravity, right? I think we're just seeing how deep these allegiances go to the point where they will defend their own who protect pedophiles. And Ali B. Sucky, one more thing I'll say, and then I'll give it over to you, Noah, is that Ali B. Sucky, okay, I guess. But the point is, we're supposed to have a conversation. Here I am just ranting. Ali B. Sucky finally spoke out about this, about one of the stories, the one that was posted a little while ago. And I just did a response video to it. I posted it on our Instagram and on YouTube. Her response was horrible. It wasn't even accurate. She didn't even report the stories accurately. I'm watching this, pulling out my hair, saying, this is maybe, in my view, Ali Stuckey's worst take on anything that I've ever seen from her. I mean, that's how bad it is. It is so misinformed. Yeah. Like, her timeline is wrong. You can read four paragraphs in the article and see that Allie is already off the mark. So, I don't know. I'm just frustrated, I think. I think between being still tired from Miami emotionally, having the newborn, right, and then the 2-year-old and being tired from that, and then this, it just, like, has pushed me over the edge of saying, like, I don't know if this is salvageable.
Yeah.
I don't know if like a remodel is the fix here, because it seems like these issues are much more systemic.
Yeah. I'm finding myself more and more every day in the exact same place. And this last report that came out, the one about is it Allegretti? Is that how you pronounce the name?
Oh, is that something? You mean the guy? Yeah.
The third MacArthur story. Yeah.
And, yeah, that's right.
This one, I think, is the one that broke me more than any of the others. The report here, you know, it describes he admits to having sex with these underage girls, sometimes forcing them into it by pretending he had a gun, ends up, you know, doing this kidnapping. Thankfully, this girl's able to escape out of the car, I think at a stoplight, if I remember right. But the church covers this up, and they say, essentially, they justify not taking it to the police. They, from what I understand from the report, they told him that he should go to the police. But they do nothing as a church. They don't do anything to reach out to the police and say, hey, there's a very, very serious issue here. And I think they allow him to continue in ministry as well. Please correct me if I'm wrong on that. That's how I read it. And the church only got involved at a systemic level, institutional level, when they found out the cops were looking for him. You know, when there was some kind of liability on their end that could come in and get involved here. You know, and that was kind of a breaking point for me in this whole, I mean, obviously all of this has been atrocious, but there's a very clear sense that they're only at a systematic level, they're only looking out for themselves and to protect their interests and their empire. And this is just what you see happening over and over again in these churches, and the response that, you know, we're getting when these reports come out and you're like, oh my gosh, this is so incredibly crystal clear. Like, why isn't there an uprising in the pews? You know, why aren't we working against this and saying, no, this is evil. And as people following after Christ, we will not stand for this. And there's just this obsessive means of like protecting the empire and raising these people up on this heroic pedestal where they can do no wrong. And any of this stuff that comes out just must be a lie. And yeah, I'm struggling so much with this, and I'm struggling with at a very core level. Like, this seems to come from this. We place this incredible amount of value on these charismatic leaders that can get up in front of thousands and thousands of people and just, you know, exude this kind of confidence that brings all this loyalty and heroism to them. And then they can just do no wrong. And then at that point, so much evil just goes by unchecked. And it seems like such a systematic thing that's kind of what what evangelicalism as a culture has come to value in leadership. And then when that's the value, when that's the objective, when that's what we're working towards, any of these things that come up is just going to be seen as a threat that has to be squashed down and wiped away, because you're messing with our system, you know?
Yes, and you're messing with our God, right? I mean, that is what makes this so insidious, is that they don't see it as their empire. They see it as God's kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
They see what they're doing as protecting the quote-unquote truth of God's, you know, revealed word. They see it as saving souls from the pits of hell.
Right.
Right? So when you critique or when you try and hold these men accountable, I mean, Allie says this in her commentary. She essentially, I'm paraphrasing and I'm putting words in a more blunt way, but she essentially says, like, you know, well, look at all the good John's done.
Right.
Like John's a faithful preacher of the word. I mean, really, like, what's a few pedophiles in this church compared to the millions that he's reached? I mean, that is the impression you get watching the video. And that's how so many see it, right? They see someone like John. Well, look at all the fruit. This is the delusion that even Hillsong, same thing, mm-hmm. Brian Houston, right? Look at all the fruit, though. Yeah, maybe Brian was an abuser. Yeah, maybe he was overly medicated and drunk and ended up in the wrong woman's room, quote unquote. Yeah, maybe he texted someone inappropriately and other stuff that I'm sure will be coming to light soon, right? But look at all the fruit. Look at how big they are. Look at how many people they've reached for God. They lie to themselves, thinking that, you know, what's a few mistakes compared to the good, right? Which is so funny, because I don't know about you, Noah, but when I was a kid,
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting under youth group pastors and teachers.
Yeah.
What they would often do was they would take some kind of like brownie batter, right? Like, mm-hmm. listen, we love brownie batters. But what happens if I just stick, you know, just one piece of dog poop in here? Does anyone want to eat it? And you go, no, of course not. They go, that's what sin is. Sin right. ruins the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So that, I think about that example often because so many of the same people who taught me that are now like, well, Tim, it's just a little bit of sin. It's just a little bit. Look right. at all the good. So they really don't hold themselves to their own standards that they mm-hmm. hold other people to, right? Yeah. And that's why so many of us are trying to find or trying to understand different ways of understanding the Christian tradition theologically, because the theology that we've inherited, it's just so damaging. It's so exclusive. It's so fundamentalist. And it's also weaponized to protect men in power who do bad things. Yeah. While also shaming actual victims, like Eileen Gray, for example, or Ashton yeah. From Camp Kanakuk.
And the whole thing seems like it comes from a very distorted perspective on what fruit actually is, right? Because when they defend that, when someone like Alyssa B. Stuckey or the people that are ranting against the Hillsong documentary, any of these cases, when they're saying, oh, look at all the good that's been done here, look at all of the people, where it's all like this very consumerist mindset of what fruit is. Fruit is this sort of like this amount number of people that we've reached or this amount of money that we've raised for this. You know, you were posting the other day about that, the leadership conference sales. And I was reading through all the, what they were selling pastors on there and what leadership and what building the kingdom quote looked like. And it was all numbers based. It was all based totally. On like, how big can we make this? If you read, the Hillsong documentary, like Brian Houston, you listen to the clips of him talking about what he's building an empire. You know, it's about size and grandeur, and it's this very materialistic mindset where the people then sort of, whether it's the intention of everyone involved or not, inevitably become the commodity and the product.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so it's this really distorted version, and I just look at that. When I hear somebody say, like, well, look at the fruit, I just can't associate those two things that way. You know? Because
right.
the fruit, to me, is the people who are being harmed. The amount yeah. of people that end up tithing in your building and signing a little paper that says I committed to Jesus is not fruit. That's right. that's just how well your marketing stunt is working. Right. And that sounds so cynical, and I know that. And obviously there are people that, sure, somebody's life has been changed by John MacArthur. I'm not denying that. But I'm saying that maybe our metrics are completely wrong if this kind of harm is going on and we're just willing to wipe it all under the rug because of some kind of consumerist value that we've associated kingdom with.
When I was in my old church still, we would have these baptisms every, whatever it was, a couple of weeks. You know, it's a big yeah, deal.
Sure.
And I remember, I was there for 6 years. And I remember thinking at like year four or five, like, huh, a lot of the people who I've seen walk down the aisle and pray the prayer and even get baptized, mm-hmm. they're not here anymore. Like, they're just gone. And I'm like, is this, but that person still counts.
Right.
You know, with the church as like a soul that was saved, someone that we reached for Jesus, but they're yeah. not there anymore. Like, they're gone. They might not even be following Jesus anymore. And you're absolutely right, Noah. Like the metrics that we've used, it's so clear to me now, it wasn't then, but it's clear to me that really church is borrowing from culture. They're mm-hmm. borrowing culture's metrics. They're borrowing our yeah. own culture's metrics of bigger is they're borrowing capitalist metrics.
Yeah.
Right. And they're saying this is how we measure success. And then they're damning the world or other churches for being too worldly for talking about racism.
Right.
Right. Or social justice. Right. But they don't
for
even
caring
see,
about people.
Right. But they don't even see that they are also borrowing from culture
yeah.
in a way that really dehumanizes people and just makes them a number.
Yeah.
Dude, how many Easter Sundays have you been a part of where it's like the following week, wow,
oh my
we
God.
Had over 40 souls come mm-hmm. to Christ. Over 100 people came to Christ. You see them bragging about it on their Facebook, yeah. right? Did they really though?
Right.
Most are not there anymore.
Yeah.
Right? They just signed the paper. The metric is shit. Yeah. Like it's a bad metric. It's a bad yeah. metric. And I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. And
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
That was my frustration, you know, when I was at the church that I was working at previously, and we talked about numbers, and, you know, at the end there, I was really struggling with a lot of internal tension, because I was thinking, like, even Sunday to Sunday, like, are the things that we're doing here actually an act of care for the people that are entrusting us with themselves and their spiritual growth? Or are these things decisions that we're making to fill the seats? And, you know, I would come with some of these concerns to people, and the objections would be like, well, less people would show up if we did that, you know? But I'm like, but would those people be more enriched? Like, you know, but that's not the metrics. And whether that's intentional or whether that comes from all of the pressures of this being a career and all of the financial securities and all of that, you know, shit that's built up in the system now that creates all of this, even at like a micro level, even at smaller churches.
Yes.
It's just so difficult to look at that and not see it as... there's like a poisoned root to this whole thing. And I'm with you there. I'm starting to really struggle to reconcile that and have any hope that this thing that we're looking at, this, you know, American white Western evangelicalism, is something that can actually be redeemed.
Yeah. You know, one of the reasons why these numbers are so attractive is because people really think that if they don't, people are going to burn in hell forever. Like, right. It is primarily, even the term soul winning, like, who invented that term? It makes me feel gross, right?
Right.
But it's the idea of saving the soul from hell, which isn't even a biblical idea, considering how Paul and Jesus are committed to some kind of bodily resurrection, ultimately. Right. But yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, because for them, it's, well, we could feed someone, but if we save their soul from hell in the long term, what's really more important?
Right.
Right? Like, hey, maybe they're poor here, but they're rich in heaven.
Right.
Like, it's that kind of carrot on a stick. And that theology is what has led to other Christians really being numb to other people's suffering. Because, well, listen, don't worry. It gets better in the next life.
Right.
You know, so yeah. It is what it is, but it is very frustrating. And, you know, I agree with you. What's interesting is I know that, like, this is not new. I know I'm not the first person to think about this.
Sure.
You know, and I know that, like, especially Black liberation, this is what a lot of this has come out of. Yeah. And so there's certainly other ways to think about this. I think that the reason why I posted that reel the other day was because, you know, I like being honest with the community. But number two, I think, like, it's important to recognize when maybe intentions have shifted on an organizational level, right? Like, from, oh, maybe we can reform, maybe we can push things forward this way, to actually, I don't know if this part of Christianity is salvageable.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to let it go and maybe even be part of its dismantling, and also lean into other ways that are already established. Like, we're not trying to start anything new here,
but
lean into other ways of being Christian, of being committed to Jesus, that at a minimum allow for accountability, right? Yeah. Like, we have to be, and we say this often, but it's not about being perfect. Any tradition has anywhere has problems. Doesn't matter if it's Christian or not. But the accountability piece, the repentance piece, those are the missing pieces that a lot of us, I think, are so desperate looking for. And, you know, we're finding, Noah, that it's these issues are not just in those circles. I mean, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's been some stuff that's been happening even in our own deconstruction spaces, you know, with Dirty Rotten Church Kids, and there's been some other stuff that's happened with some other accounts that I've heard of through the grapevine. So just because an account is a deconstruction account or is critical of the church, it doesn't mean that it's automatically going to be safe or that it's going to handle itself well. Now, I don't know the full story yet with Dirty Rotten Church Kids. It seems like Adrian's been handling things really well. I've talked to two of the victims who were kind of involved with Josh, who is the other half of Dirty Rotten Church Kids. So it seems like they are handling it well so far, which is great. I'm really glad to hear that. And friends, I don't know many details. You can go to their Instagram account, Dirty Rotten Church Kids. There's a statement there. And then on the second post where comments are enabled, you can see from the victims themselves. So I just recommend you going to read that. But I bring that up because I think what's happening is that we have to understand that as we try to create some new spaces, if all we know is toxic evangelicalism, we have to be so careful with how we build these new spaces. And I'm talking about myself here, right? Yeah. Like, I am a product of white, male-centered evangelical culture.
It's all we've ever known, right?
Right. And so how we develop new evangelicals, how we build it, how we have the power distributed throughout the organization, right? That's important. That's a big deal. Yeah. And so I am aware of that. Doesn't mean I'm always going to be perfect, but we have to have systems that allow for accountability. And I think though also, and this is a new thought, so friends, just bear with me. I'm trying to work this out a little bit, but just like how someone on this side of the screen, right, like maybe myself or Noah or whoever, who help out on like the I'm going to use a maybe a slightly triggering term, but the on the side of leadership, we'll say, okay, people who are like in charge of some of this stuff. There's definitely legitimate pitfalls that we can easily fall back into that create toxic systems of abuse, narcissism, all that kind of stuff. However, there's also another cycle of people who are used to consuming from the evangelical church, finding new spaces to consume, and then putting those people who are on that platform in a place where they're also infallible, right? So like, you know, so what I'm thinking of is like person A comes to church, sees the pastor, says, oh my God, this pastor has helped me. I love this pastor. They are infallible. They could do no wrong. Turns out pastor is abusive, right? And like the whole world comes crumbling down. Can we repeat that cycle as well in these spaces? Yes. Like, yes, we absolutely, absolutely can. You know? And so I think part of that is I think how we defeat some of that is we keep in mind that A, I'm not a leader. I'm a tour guide. I'm a facilitator, right? Maybe I've helped to build some of this stuff up. But also B, people should be empowered and they should feel a sense of not commitment, but like a sense of ownership where it's like, you know, I can speak to Tim or to Noah if I think something is wrong. Now, obviously, when you have a lot of people, you can't listen to every single opinion and enact every single perspective, right? But the idea is that you have that open communication. I mean, honestly, Noah, this is so dumb, but like that's part of why, like, even when I'm on camera, sometimes my hair isn't done. I don't look that great because I want people to know, like, I'm not pretending, you know. There isn't like some like facade of Tim, like, ooh, this is Instagram Tim, this is real life Tim. That's not how it works for me. Like, I wake up, I talk to you all. What you see is what you get. Sometimes I look good, sometimes I don't. I don't give a shit, you know. Yeah. But I think those little things hopefully help break down that wall. Am I making sense here?
Absolutely. Yeah, and the way
don't
that,
lie to me, Noah.
No,
don't you lie to me.
No.
Because right. if you don't tell me what I want to hear, I'm going to fire you.
Oh,
you
know? I know how it works. I'm under a lot of stress here. And I think that the way that I like break that down in my mind is that there needs to be a radical change in what we value, culturally within. I guess you'd say within the Christian community, however you want to parse that out. And I think that that's a lot of what we're pushing back on and a lot of what, for myself, what I'm recognizing when my hope, because, you know, I still wake up every day with this hope, like the change is possible, you know? And by the end of the day, it feels like it gets knocked back a couple pegs more often than I want to admit. But the thing that I see is like what needs to change now is a radical shift in actually the values that create all of the decisions.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's what we need to develop as new evangelicals or as people that are walking away from this thing. And I think that's the thing that must be changed within those systems for them to possibly reform. And I think it's the least likely thing to change. And I don't say that out of cynicism, I just out of observation, because the values are what's propping up the security of the whole thing, whether that's the value of the image, that's the value of the metrics, the consumerist mindset. And some of that does play into the theology too, like you mentioned, you know, the fear of hell, these things that all enforce some of those values and the way that they're carried out. But I don't think that they mutually have to go together. I think that there's a better way forward, even within those theological traditions, though I may disagree with some of them. I think that there is room to recognize that the way in which we're approaching these values, the way we're building other values around them for our systems, aren't working for the care, the betterment of the actual people involved, and we need to change that. Whether or not that's going to happen, I don't know. I sure hope it does. You know, I hope that the work that happens here, the work that happens in the individual lives of the people in our community and similar communities, is moving culture forwards in this direction. But I don't know. You know, I don't know where we're going to land. But that change in values, that thing that you're expressing, you know, even in yourself, when you choose not to do your hair before you take a video, you know, that's an expression of value, of like, what I'm valuing here is authenticity rather than presentation.
Right. Right. Well, okay. And that's actually, you hit a great point that I think is worth
that's a rare thing.
Minute.
So let's like glorify that for a moment, because it's not going to happen again anytime soon. And I just want to bask in that for a second.
Go ahead, Noah. The spotlight's all yours, man. That's part of what we're seeing in evangelicalism. Yeah. Like, so here's the thing, right? I think for a long time, a lot of us assumed that if we had shared beliefs, we would have shared values, mm-hmm. right? Oh, if we believe this about the Bible and this about, you know, whatever it is about God and Jesus and salvation, then our values will be the same.
Right.
And Trump exposed, right, 2016 and the murder of Ahmaud and Breonna and George Floyd. That whole segment of life in the pandemic showed that our values are not the same.
Yeah.
They're just not. Mm-hmm. And that made me rethink, like, well, if my values are not the same, then is our theology really the same? Right? Are my beliefs really the same?
Yeah.
Ultimately, I'm more centered at this point on values than I am on belief. Like, for example, Joe Lumen, who I love. I talk to her all the time. Joe and I do not share a lot of the same beliefs around God, around Jesus, the Bible. We share some, but we share the same value of liberation, of doing our best to decolonize ourselves, right? Of doing our best to think about the other, trying to bring heaven to earth. We share those values, and that's why I love working with her.
Yeah.
And so I think that is such a big point for us to recognize. Russell Moore and I have very different beliefs about a lot of things, a lot. But in a lot of ways, he shares a lot of the same values that I share when it comes to church accountability, resisting Christian nationalism. That's why I can have him on the podcast. We can have a great conversation, even if some of our beliefs are radically different.
Sure.
Right? And there's certainly room to critique what do beliefs give birth to, and are they healthy? We can debate all that, okay? But the point is that I think a lot of us are finding that we assume that beliefs and values are one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out it wasn't. It wasn't. And 2016 really showed us that. Like, oh my God, I thought that if we had the same belief about sexuality, surely who would vote for the guy on the cover of Playboy? Turns out 80% of white evangelicals would, right? Like the value was different. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that, and I'm probably being redundant here, but I just wanted to stress something else that you were getting at there, is that a lot of times our theology is a development from our values rather than the other way around. As much as that's not something that, say, a conservative evangelical would want to admit, a lot of times those values are actually the thing that drive us to interpret something a specific way.
Mm. That is a great point. Well, I think we should also talk about another conference that's coming up that I saw. Speaking of, again, just another example of like, what the hell is happening? So a lot of you know probably Nathan Finocchio by now. He's a guy on Instagram, used to be at Hillsong. He founded what's called TheosU. It's like a digital... I don't think it's accredited. I think like you pay a subscription and you can watch teachings on theology. Nathan's Instagram is pretty problematic, especially his stories. He said a lot of things I think are just really harmful, and really, he doesn't seem like a nice guy. Now, I've talked to Nathan personally, privately, and he was great to me, super charitable. He even thanked me for being in the deconstructing world and said, we need more people like you. And then like a week later or 2 weeks later, he lit me up on Instagram because Devon, our intern at the time, did a series on women in leadership. And he just totally like, I mocked him and mocked what we were doing. I was like, okay, this is weird. We were also scheduled to have a podcast interview, but he ended up missing the first appointment. And then after we rescheduled, his assistant then postponed it again. And then I said, I'm done. I'm not going to keep chasing this guy down. So I have not talked to him since then. But he has, or the Theos U does a conference every year. And this year, now it's a pretty big lineup, and there's a lot of people on there that we could talk about, like a lot. But I want to highlight three people that are speaking at this Theos U conference, which we can register, as we found out, for free and watch. So the first big speaker is Matt Chandler, which I'm already like, okay, whatever. You know, it's Matt. It's Matt. Not a huge fan. Also, why would Matt go on, you know, speak at a conference where Nathan, or someone like Nathan.
Yeah, that one got me too.
It doesn't make any sense. Like Nathan, I mean, he, in my view, Nathan mocks often. He dehumanizes. Like he just is very. Anyway, well, he's just Nathan.
Am I correct that Matt Chandler was actually one of the voices that began to say something productive about the race conversation a few years ago, that Nathan would have, you know, radically disagreed with.
I think so. I can't verify that, but I remember hearing whispers about like, you know, okay, hey, Matt, all right, not bad, Matt. Maybe we're heading somewhere kind of thing,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
So he's speaking, and then you have Eric Metaxas is speaking. Now, ooh. Eric Metaxas, okay, if you don't know who he is, he was someone who founded the Jericho March, which happened before the January 6th insurrection. It was a rally to fight the election being stolen from Donald Trump. Eric Metaxas has gone off the far right deep end over the past like 2 years. And I would argue he was one of the leading voices that gave birth to the insurrection. And he still preached that, you know, the election's been stolen. I mean, he's I hate to, I don't want to dehumanize, but he's kind of like a far right hack at this point. Like it's almost a joke. He's speaking, which again, like why? And then you have Mark freaking Driscoll is speaking, which is so crazy because Mark used to be the president of the Acts 29 Network. Matt Chandler took over for him. So you have Matt Chandler and Mark Driscoll speaking at the same conference, which tells me that they're at least on good terms or at least on neutral terms, mm-hmm. which makes a lot of sense because in the beginning of this year in January, Matt Chandler did an interview with Christianity Today and they gave him so many layups. This was when the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast was really hot. And for those of you who don't know, that podcast was a 15-episode series by Christianity Today that documented how abusive and how harmful Mark Driscoll was when he started his church, okay? So this was a hot topic. And the interviewer gave Matt Chandler so many layups to like publicly say, Mark should not be in leadership. Mark should not be a pastor. And he didn't. He said nothing about Mark Driscoll. And now here he is speaking at the same conference that Matt Chandler is at or Mark Driscoll is at. It honestly blows my mind why we're still platforming Mark Driscoll and why someone like Nathan, who claims to be this like Bible nerd, Bible-believing Christian, you know, orthodox and everything, has no problem platforming someone who clearly, by their own standards of qualification for elder and teacher, is so clearly disqualified. But, you know, here we are, Noah, and it just grinds my gears.
Yeah. Yeah, part of me is like very tempted because it's free to sign up for this conference and just to like, you know, suffer through it. And I don't even understand those choices. I mean, you laid it out better than I could express it, honestly. But just the bizarreness about those choices of keynote speakers and what that reflects about the defensiveness of this evangelical culture, that these people that in a lot of ways, at least from my understanding, should be pretty diametrically opposed to each other, you know, are willing to all get in the room together around this and take this collective stand against God knows what they're going to talk about at this conference. I mean, when you go on the Theos U website, the first thing you see are ads for courses about, you know, critical race theory and homosexuality and liberalism and all this stuff. Like that's what he's promoting as his talking points about what you're going to get out of these courses. So you can already guess, you know, what this conference is going to be about. And well, and the fact that these...
I'm starting to get you off guard.
No. Well, I just think it's sad and fascinating in a weird sense to me that you're getting these voices together in a room that should be so opposed to each other for a number of reasons that aren't. And again, it probably comes back to the value conversation, right? Because some of the values that they hold about, you know, power are maybe more important than their own convictions about the well-being of people and how that should influence our theology.
Well, you know, if you go to the website, the first thing you see is spirit and truth. That's like the big thing. Having Eric Metaxas as a guest speaker is not spirit or truth. The man has promoted blatant election fraud lies in the name of God for years, right? Like, there's no sense of truth. Now, here's what's so interesting. When I talked to Nathan privately, he kind of hinted like, hey, listen, the conservatives don't like me either. I say things that get them upset. It's not true. I mean, it's clear if you watch his stories or if you look at this lineup that he lands in right/far right circles. I mean, clearly. And I know this because his brother, Gabriel Finocchio, who I've also talked to privately, one day his brother randomly like chatted me on Instagram via video chat. Again, super cordial to me, super nice to me, publicly a different kind of person. So he goes to a church called the King's Church in New York City, which was started by a guy named Dave Engelhart, who is the brother-in-law, I'm not going to say of who, but I know him because he is a well-known musician who toured with a very well-known worship band for a lot of years, okay? And I knew this David guy because I was close to that person at the time. And when the election stuff happened, that person started sending me his brother-in-law, who was talking to Charlie Kirk. That's this David Engelhart guy. He's a lawyer, but he is, again, same thing, election fraud, far right. We're not going to mask up. I mean, it's a typical, like, far right conservative fundamentalist who thinks that he knows everything. He has absolute truth, etc. And these guys all talk. You know, like, I know Gabriel and Nathan are close. I know that Nathan's been to Gabriel's church where David Engelhart is pastoring in New York City. Like, that's the thing is, like, Nathan can try and make it seem like he's a moderate.
Yeah.
But the people he surrounds himself with are not moderates. Yeah. They are far right. Which is, listen, just call what it is. Just admit that Theos U, you know, is a think tank for far right theology, for far right sexual ethics, and for far right politics. Like, just call it what it is. And it drives me crazy when they don't. And this speaker lineup is such a great example of, again, Mark Driscoll. I mean, one of the most notoriously abusive pastors in white evangelical spaces. The guy has an entire podcast dedicated to him. And Matt Chandler speaking at a conference where Mark's going to be. The optics of that, at a minimum, even if Matt and Mark never see each other, even if Matt and Mark aren't even friends, the optics is total horseshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a statement of what's truly important. And that's just heartbreaking to me.
That's right.
And, you know, Metaxas, just to like pile on this a little bit, you know, speaking of the election and all that, very, very committed to this idea of fraud, you know, has quotes like, you know, for those of us who know this is a massive fraud, we have no choice but to fight. Quote, we need to fight to the death, to the last drop of blood, because it's worth it. That's a direct quote. Like, and I have seen much worse than that from him. I can't find it right now when I'm just doing a quick Google search, but the incitement of violence, the aggression that's being promoted here and then now platformed, but you know, by someone like Finocchio, who may at least claim to be moderate in these conversations. And just the layers of deception there are heartbreaking and a whole lot of other words, you know, it's just too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is, man. I mean, and you know, this is why I made the reel that I made, where it's like, is this salvageable? Because they don't see it.
Yeah.
They just don't. You know, like, there's a certain arrogance of white evangelicalism, generally speaking. There's a certain arrogance of, well, we have the truth. No one else has it. There's an arrogance of, we have to defend, you know, God and defend the Bible, as if the creator of the universe needs to be defended from other humans. Okay. Yeah. But he does, apparently. You know, and honestly, it really is centered on like two or three things, racism, sexuality, and who you vote for.
Yeah.
Those are the three things. We're not talking about like Nicene Creed stuff here. We're not talking about, legitimately orthodox positions. We're talking about things that, like, they're debated. They've been debated. I mean, one quick thing, and then we'll get ready to wrap up. But, you know, the sexual ethic one's a great one because they always say, well, you know, queer inclusion is not historically a sexual orthodox position. That's true, but neither is birth control. Mm-hmm. Like, if you practice birth control, congratulations. You don't practice a historical Christian ethic. Because until like the 1920s, everywhere, every church, including Protestants, did not believe in using any kind of contraceptives, period.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing. No pull-out method, nothing, okay? Yeah. You're not wrapping it up. No, birth control wasn't invented then, but it was not a thing. And now almost no white evangelical thinks twice about using birth control. So again, they just think that, like, their shit don't stink. Like, oh, we have the corner on orthodoxy, but you don't. It's honestly a load of malarkey. And the more I do this work, right, the more I read, I'm sure the same thing with you, Noah, the more we're in these spaces, the more, like, wait, they're not even the words that they use and that they've cornered mm-hmm. aren't even applicable to them.
Yeah.
They've really redefined these words.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, no, we're just holding the line on orthodoxy. No. You've redefined orthodoxy, and then you said you're holding the line on your version of orthodoxy mm-hmm. while telling us that it's historical Christianity.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's like the queer inclusion one's a great example, because when you look at the studies, and there's entire books about this, you study what those six clobber passages actually meant in their original context, and what they were condemning was pedophilic, sexually abusive behavior with power dynamics, you know? So the verses that are being used to exclude people in the church, to push people away, are the verses that actually are condemning the actions of the people in power and exposing them to be wolves in sheep's clothing, you know? Yeah. So it's that whole thing that all of this is being twisted to propagate a lie.
Yeah. Well said. Well, I don't know. I feel better now. Do you feel better?
Yeah, we got all our ranting out, so I can get, like, to my work day now and actually get something done.
Yeah, no, seriously, right? Well, I think we'll put the pause on this conversation for now. I think we covered a lot of ground.
Yeah,
hopefully audience enjoyed it.
Some week later, we got to do the Irwin McManus stuff too.
I know,
boatload and a half, but I'm out of breath now from, you know.
Same. And I have another meeting I have to go to after this. So, all right, friends. Well, here you go. Another episode, little bonus episode for you. Hopefully you enjoyed it. If you like the show, give us a rating, subscribe, share this with a friend. If you want to support us, you can click on the link in our show notes or follow us on social media. We'll talk to you all next time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.